case, Edstrom versus Companion. Mr. Murray? Yes, Mr. Where are we? Mr. Murray?
Yes, may it please the court, counsel. My name is John Murray, and I represent the appellant plaintiff, Edstrom Industries. In this appeal, Edstrom is asking the court to reverse the district court's denial of its motion to vacate an arbitration award. An arbitrator's authority stems from the agreement of the parties. If an arbitrator disregards the substantive law the parties have chosen for their dispute, even worse, if an arbitrator actually issues an interpretation which is contrary to that substantive law and unenforceable under that substantive law, then the arbitration award must be vacated. That's precisely what happened here. At its essence, the dispute between Edstrom and Companion Life is an insurance coverage dispute. Edstrom sponsors a self-insured group health plan for its employees. The medical claims are paid out of Edstrom's operating revenues. To minimize the economic impact of a catastrophic medical claim, Edstrom purchases stop-loss insurance. For calendar year 2004, it purchased that stop-loss insurance from Companion Life. The stop-loss contract took effect on January 1 of 2004, and under its terms, Companion agreed to reimburse Edstrom for the medical claims it paid for individuals covered under the plan in excess of $65,000. The stop-loss contract covered claims incurred in 03 and 04, provided they were paid in 04. Despite those provisions...
Yes. You win this appeal if this is not reinsurance.
Correct. That is our position, yes, Your Honor.
But are you still on the hook for going back to the arbitrator to apply Wisconsin law and make a determination whether you knew or should have known that these big expenses were coming down the pike and that's why your company went and got the insurance?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. This appeal does not resolve the issues. It would have to go back to arbitration for that determination.
Okay, that's my understanding, and I just want to be sure that...
Absolutely. This appeal is not dispositive. The reason we are here is that the arbitrator failed to follow the substantive law chosen by the parties. The parties in their stop-loss contract agreed that Wisconsin law would apply to its interpretation. They agreed that any disputes would be submitted to arbitration, and they agreed that the arbitrator would be required to strictly apply the rules of law applicable thereto, Wisconsin law. There is a provision in Wisconsin's insurance code, section 631.11, which limits an insurer's ability to deny coverage or to modify its coverage based upon a non-disclosure or a misrepresentation from an insured. The primary dispute in this appeal is the applicability of that statute, because Companion Life has denied reimbursement for almost $900,000 in medical claims, which Edstrom paid on behalf of Joseph Wisniewski, the infant son of David Wisniewski, one of its employees. Joseph Wisniewski was born in August of 2003 with vocal cord paralysis.
Well, what does all this have to do with whether it's reinsurance or not?
That's the issue for us,
very narrow question.
Absolutely. The issue is whether it's reinsurance, because the entire Chapter 631 is a chapter in which the legislature gives guidelines for the interpretation of every insurance contract issued to a Wisconsin insured, with four exceptions. One of those exceptions is reinsurance. If the stop-loss contract issued by Companion is reinsurance, then Section 631.11 does not apply. Edstrom loses the appeal.
Right.
In Wisconsin, reinsurance is insurance between two insurers. It is.
Wait, I slipped a cog. If it's not reinsurance, you lose. I'm sorry. If it's reinsurance, you lose.
Right.
Why is that? Because of this provision?
Because we are claiming that Section 631.11 applied to the policy and should have been followed by the arbitrator. It was not.
In other words, you're relying on this provision B, this subsection B?
Yes. Yes, subsection B, which prevents an insurer from denying coverage or modifying coverage.
See, so you're accusing them of a misrepresentation?
No, Your Honor. Well, we are the insured. Companion Life denied coverage denied reimbursement for the claims paid to Joseph Wisniewski because Joseph Wisniewski's medical condition existed prior to the effective date of the policy, but it was not disclosed by Edstrom. Companion claims that the stop-loss contract gives it the unfettered right, based on that nondisclosure, to alter the terms of stop-loss coverage for Joseph Wisniewski, regardless of what Edstrom knew, regardless of what Edstrom should have known. And the arbitrator interpreted the policy similarly. There really can be no question that that interpretation is inconsistent with Section 631.11. The issue is whether the arbitrator was bound to apply Section 631.11.
I'm lost. So is the key thing in this subsection B made by a person other than the insurer?
No, Your Honor. The key.
Right, now suppose that this applies. That
yes.
You're an insurance. An insurance company. So this applies. Now, why do you lose then?
We're not the insurance company, Your Honor. We are the insured.
No, I know that, but I thought the issue was that if you've purchased reinsurance, if your stop loss is reinsurance, then that makes you an insurer. Isn't that the issue?
It's actually the reverse order. In order for the stop loss policy to be reinsurance, Edstrom needs to be an insurer.
That's what I'm saying.
And you're not an insurer.
I'm saying, look.
We're not an insurer. That's absolutely right.
No, but look, would you try to be clear? Your contention is you're not an insurer.
Correct.
Because stop loss insurance is not reinsurance.
Correct.
Now, slow down for a minute and explain to me, why is it that if you're an insurer, this provision nails you? You said if you're an insurer, you lose. Now, why?
The reason, if Edstrom is an insurer, then the stop-loss contract issued by Companion Life is reinsurance. Chapter 631 does not apply to reinsurance. That would mean that the section you're looking at, 631.11 subparagraph B, would be inapplicable to the stop-loss contract.
Why is that important to you?
It's important because...
Well, it's important to you, isn't it? Because you don't sell insurance. You're not an insurance company.
Well, yes, but answering his...
Answering
Judge Posner's question more directly, it is important to us because Section 631.11 makes up, in Edstrom's opinion, the substantive law the arbitrator was supposed to apply. He didn't.
You're wandering off again. What difference does it make to you whether this section applies to you?
If that
section, how does that affect your dispute with Companion?
If that section applies, the arbitrator's decision must be vacated, and Edstrom...
You're not responding. Look, forget the arbitrator.
In the context of the dispute?
Provision in 631.11, what is the provision that somehow is important to you so that if it's inapplicable, if it's...
631.11 subparagraph 1B reads that no misrepresentation and no breach of an affirmative warranty that is made by a person...
Right.
Other than an insurer or an agent of the insurer,
right,
in the negotiation for procurement.
How does that relate to this
case? That means that if Edstrom, who is not an insurer or agent of the insurer...
That's the question, right? Okay.
What is the question?
Whether you're an insurer.
No.
Let me try to understand this myself. I think your position is we didn't know these catastrophic events were going to
know the condition of the child.
So we didn't know. So we are entitled to rely on this Wisconsin law, which says unless we knew, they can't get out of the deal.
Yeah.
Isn't that
correct?
Essentially what you're saying? And you have a right to rely on this Wisconsin law because you are not an insurance company, and this isn't a deal. This doesn't involve reinsurance.
Correct.
But now, what provision is of Wisconsin law you relying on?
For what point, Your Honor?
For your case against Companion.
I think our reliance on 631.11 is more clear if you substitute the word insurer in it. the provision can be read, no misrepresentation and no breach of affirmative warranty by an insured or applicant for insurance can be a basis for denying coverage or modifying coverage unless the insured or applicant knew or should have known of the fact which was misrepresented or which it did not disclose.
That's good.
That is relevant to our dispute with Companion Life because...
Is that the basis of your claim?
Yeah. Is what the basis for it?
Is the basis of your claim that you didn't know?
Absolutely. The basis of our claim is that a disclosure statement...
That's not based on the statute. It's rather that the statute would wipe it out if it applied. Is that the problem?
The statute would force a modification of the stop-loss contract so that Companion Life could modify stop-loss coverage only upon proof.
So your suit is based on the ordinary obligations of an insurance company, namely Companion, to an insured.
Yes.
That's what you're based on.
Yes.
But you're worried that if this provision applies, because you get classified as insurer, then you get wiped out. Is that right?
No, Your Honor. The categorization of insurer is relevant in a separate context. The issue of whether Edstrom is an insurer is relevant to the question of whether the stop-loss contract is reinsurance. If the stop-loss contract is reinsurance, this statute does not apply because the legislature has determined that this section and this entire chapter of Wisconsin law does not apply to reinsurance contracts. So the question...
And how does that hurt you?
Well, if this statute does not apply, then there is no statutory limitation on Companion Life's ability to modify its stop-loss coverage for Joseph Wisniewski's claim.
They can shut you off because if that applies.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You're not relying on this 63.11 for your cause of action. You're not saying they violated some...
Our cause of action is based on a stop-loss contract.
It's just a suit for breach of contract.
This is an appeal of an arbitration award, which was based on an insurance contract, a stop-loss insurance contract.
I disrupted your argument with my dumb question. So you take a few more minutes and explain why you think that you shouldn't be classified as insurance.
I'll leave it to the panel. I can either address it at greater length now, or I can wait until for rebuttal after you've had it.
Wait for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Murray. Ms. Reed.
May it please the Court, Mr. Murray. I'm Ann Reed from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I represent Companion Life Insurance Company. The District Court's decision should be affirmed because Mr. Levitt, the arbitrator in this case, acted fully within his power.
But do you agree the dispositive issue is whether this contract should be classified as a reinsurance contract?
I agree that that is a dispositive issue, but not the dispositive issue. In fact, there are two ways to get to the conclusion that Mr. Levitt acted within his power, and only one of those requires looking at the is it reinsurance or not question at all. So, no, I don't agree that this entire appeal turns on that question, although it could if the court chooses to go there.
If I read your brief correctly, what you said was it doesn't make any difference whether the arbitrator blew the law or blew the facts, as long as he was operating.
I'm not sure I'd summarize it quite that way, but I would say it doesn't make any difference whether the statute applies or not. Because, and this is the second way to get there.
The arbitrator can make all the mistakes the law he wants as long as he doesn't do anything that looks like he's stealing.
And that's essentially the question here. I'd like to divide my argument into three parts. One, what is the arbitrator's power in this case where we're not just looking at any arbitration clause, but a specific arbitration clause that says that the arbitrator should strictly apply the law? That clause is the reason I'm standing here. I think without that, Edstrom would have no argument. I'd like to take a minute and talk about how this court should interpret that, and then look at the two different ways that the court can find that the arbitrator was within his power.
Is so limited here. Let me ask you.
Sure.
Why, if it's not reinsurance, why then could this arbitration decision stand as is? Now, I think you have an opportunity to show, heck, they knew or should have known that these expenses were coming down the pike. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that there was ever a determination of that because the arbitrator said it doesn't make any difference whether they knew or shouldn't have known.
Right. If this court believes that it's not reinsurance, there are two ways that this arbitration decision could stand as is, and they both come from the same principle. Mr. Leavitt was bound to interpret Wisconsin law, and he did that. This court has held that if there is any interpretive path from Wisconsin law, which limits his power under this contract, to the result he reached, if there is any interpretive path to get there, the arbitration award should be upheld. Even if this court were deciding the issue as it came up from the courts and thought that this contract was not reinsurance, there are two different, perfectly valid interpretive paths to get from 631.11 to the result in this case. Number one, a perfectly valid interpretive path is to say 631.11 says that we can't hit Edstrom unless they knew or should have known, but this statute is up to here with evidence that they knew or should have known, and so we can interpret Wisconsin law to say it doesn't matter whether the statute applies.
But the arbitrator didn't say those things.
The arbitrator didn't say those things, but arbitrators both here and in Wisconsin don't have to set forth their views. And this court has, cases upholding arbitrators' awards, not just district court decisions, but arbitrators' awards, on grounds they didn't find. The reasons to do that for arbitrators are even stronger than for district courts because arbitrators don't have to say what the grounds are at all.
But what if they do?
If they do, still, and in fact, this court has a perfect example in 2006 in the Wise case where the arbitration panel actually granted summary judgment in favor of one side or the other. This court upheld that, but saying, even though it was essentially a summary judgment decision by the panel could have found facts, and they wouldn't have been out of their minds, I think the court's language was, to have found facts to uphold that appeal. So this court has precedent. The Elger case from this court is another example of arbitration panels going one way, and this court saying, but they could have gone another way, and upholding the award. Judge Evans, the second way to find an entirely different interpretive path from 631.11 to the arbitrator's result is to follow the path that the magistrate judge took in this case and to find that this contract was reinsurance. What I want to stress, however, is although the magistrate judge was correct, this court need not agree that the magistrate judge was correct in finding that this contract was reinsurance. This court need only find that the magistrate judge has demonstrated for us a perfectly valid interpretive path from 631.11 to the result in this case. If we can't uphold Mr. Leavitt based on one of those two perfectly valid interpretive paths from 631.11 to Mr. Leavitt's result, then my client never had an arbitration.
Well, is this separate from the question of reinsurance?
I'm sorry, I don't understand the court's question.
Is your present argument independent of this issue, which I had thought the central issue, whether this should be classified as a reinsurance contract?
My argument is twofold. One, the magistrate judge is right. It is reinsurance. We win because it's reinsurance. This court need not say that it would duplicate that result. It need only say that that's a valid result, but separately.
Your argument that it's reinsurance because that's like saying every self-insurer is an insurance company.
Not at all. Not at all. The question...
What difference does it make whether a self-insurer is 100% self-insured or 10% self-insured because it has the stop-loss insurance contract?
Because whether a contract is reinsurance doesn't depend on who bought the contract. It depends on what the contract offers and what the contract says. This is a contract that offers services which have...
These insurance regulators don't want to bite all this stuff off. Why should we? I don't understand.
Number one, as I've argued, the court doesn't need to. The court can go an entirely different way, but...
I argue for this position and gotten the regulators all upset.
It really is ironic that it was 2 years ago this month that we were doing what we thought was a final arbitration hearing, and now we're here with the insurance commissioner and so on. I really do want to be sure before I sat down, though, I've made the point that what reinsurance is or isn't doesn't depend on who bought the contract. The fact is that the Wisconsin insurance statutes talk about insurers.
You know, there's a whole, we just had a case recently. This reinsurance is its whole, it's a whole world with a special vocabulary and special companies and so on and so forth and so on. And all of a sudden to say that stop loss insurance is reinsurance, that seems to me a very radical move.
It is not a radical move at all to say that stop-loss insurance is the kind of insurance that Wisconsin did not want to regulate when it put 631.11 into place. It is perfectly valid to say, as the Wisconsin Court of Appeals did in Rockline, for example, that the protective statutes that Wisconsin has put in place to protect people who are getting fire insurance and liability insurance do not apply when a business who has decided to pay the claims of others buys an insurance contract to limit its risk.
But companies, of course, are big purchasers of insurance. I don't understand that. And look, what's the difference between having stop-loss insurance and having ordinary insurance with a large deductible?
In the a big difference, and that's what claims does the stop-loss insurer, let's say, have to pay? In a stop-loss insurance contract, the stop-loss insurer is only liable to the person who bought it, in this case Edstrom, and doesn't have any direct liability to the people who pay the claims. That is reinsurance. Let me try an example and see if this makes sense. There are two ways for a health plan.
I understand you. I mean, suppose I crash my car into somebody, and he sues me or something. I have a big deductible, and that means I pay part of the claim, and my insurance company pays the rest. Right? That's not reinsurance, even though in effect I am insuring against a chunk of the claim.
That's not reinsurance because the insurance company is liable to you, the person who incurred this risk in the first place. Here we're liable to somebody who promised a third person that they would cover that person's risk, and that's simply the difference. And the policy reason behind it is that those businesses who contract for that reallocation of a risk already assumed deserve to be able to work out their own arrangements and contracts. They deserve to be able to rely on the contractual provisions that they reached. Companions
That's like saying that a company that buys insurance shouldn't have any rights under an insurance code because it's a big boy and it can negotiate its own deal.
What the Wisconsin legislature has said is that a company that buys direct insurance, like fire, liability, and so on, is protected by these statutes, and a company that buys reinsurance to cover risks that it has contracted to pay for others can work out its own arrangements. And if Wisconsin wants to change that tomorrow, it can, but Wisconsin has not changed
it. What do other states do?
I don't have a list of which states do what, and the variations are not as clear as that. For example, there are cases where a state says that accident and health policies need to have certain provisions, and then courts come along and say that a stop-loss policy isn't accident and health. So it actually is quite difficult to draw a chart that makes sense and sort of compares states one another.
This is a much litigated issue, classifying stop-loss insurance as reinsurance.
The direct issue in this case of whether a stop-loss policy of a self-insured plan is or is not out of state insurance regulation that exempts reinsurance is not discussed in the courts.
Let me ask before you
sure.
sit down. I'm not really convinced that this is reinsurance, truth. But
okay.
You've said that there's this alternative way of getting to the result that the arbitrator's decision has to be affirmed. But this agreement between these parties says Wisconsin law will apply. Suppose, hypothetically, you have this same agreement. Wisconsin law applies. The arbitrator's going to look at a case, and the case is a five-year-old kid who walks out in the traffic gets hit by a car. So the parents of the five-year-old kid have a lawsuit, and the arbitrator has to apply Wisconsin law. Wisconsin law says a child under seven cannot be negligent. The arbitrator says, I don't really care about that, what that Wisconsin law says. This kid walked out in the traffic, the kid's fault. I think the kid was negligent, so I find in favor of the insurance company. And the arbitrator issues that award. Now you come to court to one to enforce and one to vacate that award. Is your argument would be, if I follow you correctly, that so what? The arbitrator didn't have to apply Wisconsin law or in that case, and the arbitrator's decision should be affirmed. Isn't that what you're saying?
I don't think I'm going quite that far. I think it is fairly clear that if...
Not quite that far?
That's
a little scary, too.
I'll draw the line and we'll see how scary it is. There aren't many arbitration clauses that tell arbitrators that they must apply a certain law. So there's not a lot to go on
there. But this one did.
If the contract says the arbitrator has to apply Wisconsin law and the arbitrator says, I see Wisconsin law. If Wisconsin law applied, I would do X, but I don't like it, so I will do Y. I think this court would be constrained to reverse. That is not our situation.
But if he says, I see this, this is how I interpret Wisconsin law,
then
even if it's dead wrong, all he has to do is say it. This is my conception.
That is exactly right. And this court has a large body of cases interpreting a very similar kind of limitation on arbitrators' power, because although parties don't often tell arbitrators what law to follow, they very often tell arbitrators, you got to follow the contract. And so this court and Wisconsin have a long line of cases trying to figure out when is the arbitrator following the contract and when isn't he. Is he following the contract when he looks at the transcript of some other hearing? And what this court has repeatedly said in trying to figure out whether arbitrators are within the limits of a body of information from which they are supposed to make decisions is there a valid interpretive path? Whether or not it was articulated, is there a valid interpretive path? If we were in a situation where the arbitrator had just said, you know what, I see it, I know how it would apply, and I don't care, that might be a different situation, but that is where I draw the line.
Might be a different situation?
I'm not there, because the arbitrator in this case did not mention this statute at all. At the time of the hearing, there were dozens of arguments, contractual arguments, other statutory arguments. Edstrom actually didn't even raise 631.11 until the post-hearing briefings. Mr. Levitt decided many, many issues that had been raised before him. He didn't speak to this one way or the other. So we are not in a situation where he recognized it.
Well, clearly, if he had and had said, even if this law applied, I'm convinced that they knew about these catastrophic expenses.
Not only that, but there's nothing.
Then you're not even here.
That's exactly right. Not only that, but there's nothing in this record that tells us that he didn't think that. He certainly did recite that he didn't have to find it.
Yes, but so the arbitrator could just have held that. That the statute was, or that this the statute was inapplicable?
I'm out of time. May I answer?
Wait, I have...
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So the arbitrator could just have thought the statute was inapplicable and this wiped out Edstrom's claim completely?
He could have thought that.
But we don't know that he didn't think that, do we?
There is nothing on the record, in the record at all, about what he thought about 631.11, whether he thought it applied and was met by the significant failure of Edstrom to look at this situation.
We just don't know that.
We just don't know.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ms. Reed. Mr. Murray, how much time does he have? Several minutes.
An arbitrator does not have the authority to interpret a contract in a manner which is unlawful and unenforceable under the substantive law chosen by the parties. The parties did brief the applicability of Section 631.11 to the arbitrator, and on page 8 of the appendix, the arbitrator gave his rationale for the decision in a way that cannot be squared with the applicability of that statute. It bears quoting. The arbitrator said that the policy provision authorizing the fixing of an individual specific deductible for Joseph is akin to a strict liability, no fault clause. It is in no way related to or dependent upon what Edstrom knew or with the exercise of reasonable diligence and care might have been known about Joseph when the disclosure statement was faxed to Montgomery Management on December 22, 2003. The arbitrator said that I don't care what they know and I don't care what they could have known. The contract gives them this right. That is true. But the parties agreed that the contract must be interpreted consistent with and pursuant to Wisconsin law. And Wisconsin law, both Section 631.11 and 631.15, compel the reformation of an insurance contract to which Wisconsin law applies so that that insurance contract is consistent with Section 631.11. That means that in this case, the arbitrator should have conformed the insurance contract so that Companion Life could modify its coverage only if he determined Edstrom knew or should have known of this child's condition and failed to disclose it. We don't know if the evidence in the record is sufficient to find in Companion's favor on that issue because the arbitrator never got to it. To contrast your two hypotheticals.
So you're seeking statutory protection for an insured, and they're saying, no, you're an insurer, so you don't get it.
Correct.
That's
correct. And as a matter of federal law,
understood.
As a matter of federal law, Edstrom cannot be considered an insurer. ERISA prohibits it. ERISA's got a very broad preemptive provision which precludes state law from applying to, or from any state law that relates to employee benefit plans not going to apply.
Well, that is good. So why isn't it an ERISA case? Oh, because you're not a right. You're not a claimant. You're not
correct. And ERISA has some relevance to this case, but only in its Deamer clause, because ERISA's preemptive provision is narrowed by the Savings Clause, which allows state law which directly relates insurance to apply to insurers. But under ERISA's Deamer clause, self-insured plans, employer sponsoring self-insured plans, shall not be deemed to be insurers or insurance companies. The Supreme Court, United States Supreme Court, addressed this issue head-on in FMC Corporation versus Holiday, and they explained the dichotomy between self-insured and insurers and the application of ERISA preemption.
Was there stop-loss insurance in that case?
It was not.
Well, has the issue been resolved whether the Deamer Clause applies to a self-insured company that has a welfare plan but doesn't have, but also has stop-loss insurance?
I'm out of time. May I answer?
Yeah, sure.
I do not believe FMC directly dealt with that issue. I'm not aware of a case that directly dealt with that issue. However, the court's discussion in FMC is analogous here and is persuasive. The court said that a self-insured plan is not subject to state laws regulating insurance but because of ERISA's preemption provision. However, it said, if an insurer purchases an insured plan, if Edstrom went to Blue Cross Blue Shield for its health insurance plan rather than self-insuring, the savings clause would make state insurance laws applicable to Blue Cross Blue Shield and would create some indirect regulation of the welfare benefit plan by virtue of its regulation of the insurer. If an insurer who is directly providing a covered ERISA benefit plan is subject to state law while the employer is not, there is no principled basis for reaching a different conclusion, in other words, concluding that Companion Life is subject to state insurance laws, including Section 631.11, and that Edstrom simultaneously is not and cannot be considered an insurer.
Okay, well, thank you very much to both counsel.